Hey everyone, I'm Adrian Wojnarowski, host of the Vertical Podcast with Woj, powered by Digital Media. I'm in Houston today with Los Angeles Lakers coach Luke Walton, who at 36 years old had transformed himself into the NBA's most sought-after young head coaching candidate. He was 24-0 as the interim coach in Steve Kerr's absence, 39-4 overall in Golden State's historic 73-victory regular season. In a short time now with the Lakers, despite a young and at times depleted roster with injuries, Walton has instilled an environment, he's built relationships, and begun moving earth on the hard work of an NBA rebuild. He's won games too, including an improbable victory over the Warriors. The Lakers are desperate for an anchor to start them on a return to relevance. And so far, Luke Walton has shown himself to be worthy of that part. In a 40-minute visit, Luke and I went deep into the values of his coaching philosophies, from how he connects with his players to why he believes he's a far better coach in the locker room and gym when he has balance between his job and family life. He talked about the helplessness of watching both his father, Hall of Famer Bill Walton, and his close friend Steve Kerr suffer through the agony of debilitating back pain, and the guilt he felt going 24-0 without Kerr as the interim coach with the Warriors a year ago, and much, much more in our visit. So here's Lakers coach Luke Walton. And now a word from Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century, fast, powerful, and completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you to get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored for your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/Woj. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Luke, thanks for taking time out on a game day to visit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our schedule's a little busy right now, but there's enough time in the day to get some of this done.
Luke, when you wake up in the morning now as a head coach, the way you try to organize your day, the way you've got to organize your time, do you have to wake up every day thinking, like, what's important today? And as a head coach, where's the best place for me to spend my time? Because you're getting pulled in a lot of new ways.
And what I've noticed is I try to plan that out the night before. I'm not at my best first thing in the morning. So I've found that if I can plan out my next day the night before, it helps. And time management is a huge part of this job because, like you said, there's a million things that need to be done, and there's people coming at you from every direction. So it is important to prioritize what we as a group need to accomplish in a certain day and have boundaries of how much, you know, you're willing to do that day. And you know, for me, I have two young kids too, so it's also important to me that I don't neglect that part of my life either.
That's an interesting point too, Luke, because a lot of coaches, that's the hardest balance. As a player, there's time to be home. You don't have to put the hours in. I mean, you do your work in the gym. Even if you do work after practice or before, you know, it's different than a coach. And guys like working for Steve Kerr, the guys you've been around, I know for Steve, now his kids are older. They're at a different point in their life. Yours were, but he was going to go over to Cal and see his daughter play volleyball or get out and try to see his son play a college game when he was playing. Is that something you've got to be more disciplined about in terms of like, hey, there's time in the day to do that, and I got to make that a priority?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, for multiple reasons. I think for me personally as a coach, if I am in the office all day in the film room, you know, breaking things down, and I don't have any balance in my life, it's going to affect the way I coach, and it's going to affect the way I respond to stressful situations and the way I respond to losing. And for me, I think it's very important to make sure that I'm fulfilling the other parts of my life, you know, being a father, being a husband, you know, talking on the phone with my brothers, even if I'm busy and I don't have time to do it, I still make sure that I get that stuff done because it keeps me grounded. It keeps my head, you know, level to where I can make decisions as a coach, and, you know, in my opinion, make better decisions as a coach, respond to my players when they're frustrated with me or if they're not playing well or if we're having success, whatever it is. I just think I can handle all these situations better when that balance is there in the other aspects of my life.
There's a lot of guys, Luke, you know, that they do it differently, and it's they almost take pride in that they don't have a life outside the game or outside the profession and do it that way. Was there part of you when you were figuring out the kind of coach you'd be where you said, okay, is that how you're supposed to be? Do I have to stay true to myself? Do I have to look at how those other people do it? Like, how do you come to that realization at 36 that this is the perspective I want to have?
Yeah, I honestly had no idea how it was going to play out as a coach. And I got into coaching because I wanted to find a job that I was passionate about. And luckily for me, when I started coaching with Steve up in Golden State, I found out very quickly that I loved the profession. And, you know, I've heard all those same things you're talking. I've seen it. I've been with coaches that are in the office all day, every day. And that wasn't really how we did it in Golden State and with Steve. And it got to a point that I experienced firsthand, you know, the difference of what I was like as a coach and, you know, assistant coach or whatever, on days that I was swamped down, if it was my scout and I, you know, was doing all that prep work for that team, we were getting ready to play, and how that changed me and how I was as a person, as opposed to when Steve started up the tradition that on game days, me and him would go to yoga after every shoot around, and what that did for my mental state and how I approached work each day when I was doing things, you know, similar to the way Steve was. And there's still a ton of work to be done, and you do what, like we, you know, started this conversation talking about, you prioritize what needs to get done each day. And when that gets done, you know, you get out there and, you know, whether it's going out to dinner or, you know, just up in Oakland going for a drive in the mountains of the Berkeley Hills or whatever it is, you find something else to do so that you're fresh the next day when you get back into the office again.
You know, you talked about sort of finding your passion in coaching, Luke, and, you know, during the lockout, closer to the end of your career, you went and spent time with Josh Pastner at the University of Memphis with him, and then you were in the D-League for a little while with the Lakers D-League team. But being in the NBA and the time you were in Golden State, the level of success has been, it's almost not real world NBA. It's been, you guys are playing at extremely high level winning. Was there ever part of you that wondered, okay, do I love coaching? Because this is, we're winning at extremely high level. We have a historic team. I get to coach great players. All our plays work. We draw something up, it works, right? They make us. Was there a part of you going, okay, it's not going to be like this anywhere else I go as a head coach. I'm not going to get a job with this kind of talent. We're going to have to build something. Did you ever have to balance that in your mind to say, okay, this is great and I love it, but it's just not how it's going to be somewhere else?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because, you know, a lot of our coaches up in Golden State were new. And Ron Adams, who's a lifer in the NBA, you know, we always get on him because his outlook on a lot of things is more on the negative side. So
he prefers
he
to
would
call
tell
it realistic
us all the time. He even told us when we won a championship on the first year that he felt bad for some of us young coaches because it's only downhill for the rest of our coaching career from here on out. But for me, at least, I was aware of that. I was very aware of that, but I try my best to stay present and just enjoy what's happening. You know, I'm not gonna, you know, while I'm up there, at least, I'm not gonna let the fact that I know this is a very unrealistic situation, affect how much fun I'm having coaching these guys and coaching with, you know, with the other guys on staff up there. But for me, I've always loved the challenge and it's new. So did I know I would still be as passionate about it when we didn't have all those players? No, of course not. But I was excited. I was excited for that challenge to see what it was like. We have a young team here that's kind of on that building process, which is fun because we get to come in as a staff and try to put in the style of basketball that we really like and that we really think will work down the road. So it's completely different type of joy than it is coaching, you know, the most talented team in the world, but you see growth happening in these young guys. And yeah, there's a lot more frustration as a coach, trying to get all this stuff in with 19, 20 year old, young men. But from my perspective and the way that why I like this game so much and why I like coaching this game so much, it's still a lot of fun, being with these guys and trying to achieve something as a group.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
I want to tell my listeners a little bit about Stance. Stance is the official on-court sock of the NBA, which means every player in the league plays every game in Stance. Stance makes an amazing technical basketball sock, as well as an incredibly comfortable NBA casual line. So whether the fan in your life plays or cheers, whether he coaches the Lakers, the Warriors, the Knicks, there's something for all of them. The NBA collection features a variety of solid team-specific and special event styles, perfect for any basketball fan. And Stance's squad collection showcases styles designed by current players Dwayne Wade, James Harden, Klay Thompson, and Chandler Parsons. By underpinning its creative roots with a relentless focus on technical innovation, Stance has redefined what socks should feel like and the role they play in personal style. Stance ignited a movement of art and self-expression that has drawn athletes, performers, and iconic cultural influencers to the brand, a group they call the Punks and Poets. They include Dwayne Wade, Rihanna, Bubba Watson, Willow Smith, Soko, James Harden, Chris Cole, and Big Sean. I like to think of myself as an honorary member of the Punks and Poets. I'm not sure which one I am, maybe both, maybe neither. But this holiday season, Stance launched its first collegiate collection and stoked out NCAA fans across the nation. The collegiate styles make up a colorful collection for devoted fans of every generation, featuring iconic mascot team logos and signature school colors. Luke Walton and his Arizona Wildcats, I believe they're available. Check out Stance's assortment of gift boxes and sock collections. Cutoff for Christmas delivery is December 20th with overnight shipping. So go explore the newest and best-selling collections for tremendous gifts or for yourself at stance.com. That's stance.com. Stance, the uncommon thread. Now, more of my conversation with Lakers coach Luke Walton. Looking back now, Luke, the short time you spent at Memphis with college kids, the short time you spent in the D-League with mostly young guys, are you seeing the benefit even now of just that short experience you had there with teaching young guys and understanding where this group is?
I think it helped. You know, those were both great opportunities that I had. But you also see where the young players are coming from. So I think it helped more in perspective of realizing how lucky we are to be here and how special it is to be in the NBA. College was tough for me because it just, the NCAA has so many rules. So, the months I was there, we weren't, really in season yet. So you can only work out with the kids, twice a week, 30 minutes a day. And it's, to me, being on the court with the players, helping them is what I really love. So college was, that was a frustrating time, although it was a great experience. And the D League, which is also great, but it's a different brand of basketball.
Right.
It's individuals trying to get out. It's, we're trying to get notice.
It's hard to build a team environment in the D League.
Exactly.
I don't think people appreciate that with coaches
because
everyone's got their agenda and that's to get out.
Yeah. And I would have the talk with these young players, some former NBA guys, some trying to make it. And their answers were always the same to me. Coach, I know what you're saying, but I need to average 25 a game if I want to get noticed and to get out of here, which is tough to argue, you're not making much money. You're traveling to, small towns across the country. So it's tough to build that team environment, where there's players coming and going nonstop. But to get back to your original question, yeah, like those conversations and those experiences with those young men at college and in the D League, it's like anything else in life. The more you do something, the better you become at it. Helped with my ability to interact with these players from a coaching standpoint, as opposed to just being teammates with them.
And I think you put a great premium on this. You guys all did in Golden State about the relationships with players. And certainly that's what you've done in your time with the Lakers, of building trust and getting buy-in. As you know, there's lots of schemes in the league, and lots of different schemes work, offenses, defenses. There's not one way to do it. Has the time here already convinced you, or maybe kind of further confirmed in your mind, that these guys have to know you care about them and that you take time to understand them, because none of the other stuff really matters if you can't get that out of them, right?
Yeah, I do. I think I've always kind of known it as a player, and I've been blessed to play for coaches that I would run through a wall for, you know, even going back into my high school coach, who's in the San Diego Basketball Hall of Fame, and Lute Olson, and I mean, Phil, these guys I would do anything for. And, you know, I saw it firsthand though, when I worked under Steve, and his, you know, such a big part of his messaging when we first got there was, look, we're taking over a really good team. They're already really good. So we need to be in here every day doing whatever it takes to let them know that this is their team, and we're here to help guide them and build our relationships and trust them, so that when you have that trust, we can really start to coach, you know, really, you know, get on them when they're not doing things right, things like that. And I saw how well that worked, you know, with some of the best players in the world, and being able to tell them things that they probably didn't want to hear, but they needed to hear, and being able to have open communication, you know, open conversations with how we want to defend stuff, you know, taking their opinion, giving our opinions, and not having any ego involved in whose idea it was or who this or that. So, you know, I saw it work firsthand on that staff, and coming down here with a young team, we know we have a ton of coaching to do, a ton of coaching. I mean, the basics of the game, we got to get back to, shell defense, you know, the 2-9 defensive stance, you know, not reaching, basic stuff that we have to do. I feel like if we're going to harp on our guys every day about these little things, they're going to get sick of us really quick. And they're not going to get sick of us if they know we care about them. Like, not just act like we care about them, but truly right. Care about them. Let them know, you know, spend time with them one-on-one watching film, you know, have the environment set up that they know they can come talk to us anytime. If something's happening off the court, let them, you know, talk to them about that too. It's not just basketball. As coaches, especially with younger players, you know, there's a responsibility to, a lot of these kids are living away from home for the first time, and they're, you know, they're 20 years old getting millions of dollars. There's a lot of stress, a lot of responsibility comes with that. And it might sound silly to, you know, someone just listening, $1 million, a lot of stress. Well, it is for a lot of these kids that come from, you know, bad neighborhoods, or, you know, they have, you know, they want to do right, and they want to help their mom or dad or brothers out with financial responsibilities. And then there's the media saying bad things about them when they have a bad game or a bad week. So there's all this stuff that's on their plates. And, you know, I feel like we can be most effective as a group moving forward and as coaching staffs with that trust and relationship that we're here for them to help them become better players and better people.
And that's too, Luke, I would think an advantage of having played in the league, that of course things that are going on outside your life are going to affect your work, your play, what's going on. Either you went through it as a player, or you had teammates who you knew were going through it. I would think in this job, that's got to be something you have to sort of think about every day, or you're going to cheat the team.
Absolutely. I constantly have to, you know, I constantly make a point to remind myself of putting myself into their shoes. What was it like? What was I like when I was 19 years old? Could I handle this? You know, what was it like when you're playing, you know, 4 games in 5 nights,
and I'm getting all over the guys about we got to have more effort and we got to execute better, which is true. But remembering back to how physically and mentally tired that I was during those times as a player. So I think it helps for me to keep in perspective where we're at as a group, you know, what it was like being their age or being, you know, being on a team that had lost three or four games in a row. And it helps because instead of coming in and just, you know, ripping everything and being upset and irritated, you know, I'll change the mindset of, all right, you know what? We need to have fun today. You know, we've lost three games in a row. And I know normally that means it should, you know, everyone should be mad or whatever. But for our group, we need to come in and have fun today. And we'll change the practice schedule around in a way that kind of try to lift the spirits of the guys on the team. Because with us, I feel like we're at our best when our guys are having fun out there. And I think the fans have been behind the way they've been playing. And when we're moving the ball and playing with energy, that's when we're at our best. So it's important to kind of try to manipulate the practice schedule or whatever it is to keep spirits high.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Luke, we'll continue in a minute, but I want to tell my listeners about Movement Watches. Movement Watches was founded on the belief that style shouldn't break the bank. The watchmaker's goal is to change the way consumers think about fashion by offering high-quality, minimalist products at revolutionary prices. With over 500,000 watches sold to customers in 160 countries around the world, Movement Watches has solidified itself as the world's fastest-growing watch company. The company started by two broke college kids who wanted to wear stylish watches but couldn't afford them, so they started their own watch company. Movement Watches start at just $95. And listen, at a department store, you're probably looking at between $400 or $500 for a comparable watch. But Movement figured out that by selling online, they were able to cut out the middleman and retail markup, providing the best possible price. Movement offers classic design, quality construction, and styled minimalism, and they've sold over 500,000 watches in over 160 countries. Get 15% off along with free shipping and free returns by going to movementwatches.com. That's MVMTwatches.com/Woj, W-O-J. Mine looks sharp. I get compliments. I wear it all the time. I don't just put a phone in my pocket now and use the clock there. A watch is a good look. So now is the time to step up your watch game. Go to movementwatches.com/Woj and join the movement. And now back to my guest, Luke Walton. Somebody around your staff said to me that one of the most impressive things about you this year has been your ability to really have the pulse of the team. And sometimes head coaches need their staff to tell them where the mood is or where guys head. Sometimes head coaches are detached from it, but that you've been immersed in it, and it sort of shades all your decisions that as an assistant coach, sometimes you have a better beat on it. It seems like you've made a priority or it's something that's been important to you that you weren't going to be detached from this group because it affects how you make lineup decisions and all those things. Have you felt like you've been as in tune in that as guys around you seem to think you are?
Yeah, I think I have, yes. But I also have a great staff. We put together a group of guys that I really trust that interact with the players in different ways. I mean, we got Mark Mattson, who's probably the nicest assistant coach in the NBA. And then we have Jesse Mermis and Brian Shaw, who talk trash to everybody, but the players love both. You know, Mark's style because it's who Mark is, and they love Jesse and Brian because it's who they are. So we have coaches with great relationships with the players. So a lot of times they'll come to me and be like, you know, so-and-so is saying, you know, said this or he sees this, and we'll talk about it in our staff meetings. And so it's not just, you know, me being completely all-knowing of the pulse. And so there's constant conversation going back and forth about where we're at as a team, and right now is it a time to get all over them and challenge them, and which is kind of fun in its own right because every player and team responds differently. So we don't know the answer. So we have to trial and error a lot of it. And I, even with players, you know, there's some players I'll make a point to jump on and see how they respond to it. And sometimes it's backfired. Some players have completely shut down. I'm like, oh, well, you know, mental note, don't, for now at least, don't challenge this player in front of the whole team, pull them to the side. And there's other guys that have, you challenge them and they turn it up. They lock in and they get after it. Other guys, you compliment them and tell them what they're doing great, and then you see their performance go up. So as a coach, it's fun to kind of start to learn each player's triggers and the team's triggers, but a lot of it still happens through trial and error right now.
What you guys were able to do with Nick Young to turn him into, again, a really productive player again at a time when even before the year, I think the organization was still looking that if there was a way to cut ties with him, maybe he'd be here, maybe he wouldn't. Well, he was here, and then you went to work with him. In the preseason, and once you guys got together, you guys weren't calling him swaggy. It seemed like you were trying to get, it's Nick, to sort of separate that persona and kind of get this guy back. Was that something you spent a lot of time with thinking about? How do I reach back to this guy and get him productive again?
No, I mean, Nick honestly gets a lot of the credit himself. We didn't see Nick in the gym much all summer, so we had no idea what to expect. And, you know, the word getting back to us was he was at his gym up near his house in the valley, and he was working out every day and in great shape. You know, so we didn't really know what to expect when we got to training camp. And and the interesting with him is some of that, obviously as a coaching staff, we're not going to call him Swaggy P, but some of that swagginess or whatever you would say makes him what he is and makes him so valuable to us. And, you know, so when he got into training camp and we came in, we told the players, like, clean slate for everybody. Let's go. Like, people are going to earn spots. People are going to earn minutes. Let's get after it. Let's compete. And before that, I talked to Nick about the opportunities will be there for you. But you got to be committed to the defense, and we need to be a better defensive team. And to his credit, he has really stepped up on that end. I mean, watching film from our first Houston game, getting ready for tonight, he was phenomenal. I mean, he's chesting, he's guarding multiple positions, so he deserves a lot of credit. But with the success he's had, we want him to still have that confidence, and when he does some of the antics that he does, it lights up our crowd, it lights up our team, his teammates. You know, they all love Nick. He's been a phenomenal teammate in the short amount of time we've been here. So we still want him having that type of fun while he plays. We just closely monitor it, and when he's naturally gonna, you know, do some crazy stuff in practice and say some crazy things and kind of lose focus. But as long as we're on it and we just, you know, it's as simple with him right now as Nick, and give him a little look and he acknowledges it, and then he mentally locks back in. And it's been a very nice surprise. And he's been, you know, we've missed him a lot since he's been out.
Luke, since you played here as a player and won championships and were a part of another era of, you know, the kind of the glory years of the Lakers, you know where this organization has been and sort of the way it's bottomed out in some ways over the last few years. You called this a dream job, and this was hard to say no to, but this wasn't the same place you left, right? Like, did you have to sort of reconcile yourself with that you've seen the Lakers miss out on a lot of big free agents that in the past you sort of would take for granted great players wanted to come here? And I think what they found out, and New York found this out, the big markets, that it's not enough just to be a big market anymore or to have history. You've got to have a program and an organization and a talent base, because great players want to win and they want to be – that's what it takes to attract guys. And for you, has it been – is that your job now, is to put that in place so when the next free agent class comes or the next one after that, they've got to look at the Lakers again?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the NBA has changed, and it's changed with the amount of, you know, media that's out there now and the social media, and players can, I mean, you can play anywhere now and be all over, everyone sees you. it's gotten to a place where you need to be more than a great organization and have history to get these top tier players. And my number one job here is coaching the players that we have and getting a system in place and developing, you know, the young talent that we have. Those are all the things that take priority. But yeah, at the same time, we want to set a tone and we want to play a style and play with an effort that draws people to LA and gets the fans engaged in the game. So when these, you know, superstars come in and play, they see it and they see, well, you know, that looks like a lot of fun to be a part of. I want to be part of that again. And, you know, down the road when free agency comes, you know, hopefully that we're back on the map with, you know, where, you know, the top level players want to be at.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Luke, Lakers tickets, they've never stopped being tough to get, but there were questions after Kobe left. Would people want to go out and watch a rebuilding team that didn't have a superstar? And you're seeing they do. And of course, Luke, as you know, the best way to get Laker tickets is on SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a very long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to. And none of those other ticket sites seem to want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And it's pretty neat how they do it too. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place. So you save time and you never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events. And SeatGeek will let you know if the ticket prices fall. And even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value. So you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone and I use it all the time because it's simple and it works. And best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. They show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to bamboozle you with big fees on the checkout page. So listen to this next part because it's real important. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's $20 right into your pocket. And to get it, all you've got to do is this. Download the free SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Then enter promo code Woj, W-O-J. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. It does not get any easier than that unless you know Luke Walton and he just leaves two tickets for you at will call. But this is an easier way to go. So please support SeatGeek the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code Woj today. And now back to our guest, Luke Walton. Luke, I had your dad on the podcast a few months ago. I think at this point in the podcast, I might have asked like three questions, right? He was still going. But one thing I've always been curious about, you went through, and your dad and I talked at great length about it, and he wrote about it in his book, about the stretch of years where the physical pain, the anguish he went through, that I don't think a lot of people until after the fact really knew how dark it was. And as a son, you know, and your mom, and you go through it with him. When Steve Kerr went through the same thing, and you know, you became obviously the interim coach last year, did it hearken you back right away? You went through that with somebody you really cared about, and you know, you saw the pain. What was it like to go through it again, or as somebody who wants to help, but there's nothing you can do for that person?
It's tough. It really is because. You know, as kids growing up, my dad used to always preach to us, without your health, you have nothing in life. Nothing else matters without your health. And you don't really understand it until you get older and you see it happen, you know, whether it's to yourself or people that you care about, people you love. And it happened to my dad. I mean, he's, as you know, he loves life more than most people do. And he was knocked out because he didn't have his health. And, you know, it was so, I mean, to see him come back from that was just so amazing. And see him regain that passion for life was incredible. And then to come work for someone like Steve, who you also know is as good as it gets. I mean, he is a phenomenal human being, and see how much fun he was having coaching and putting in this system with the best players in the world that play the game. the right way. Play a game that whether you like the Warriors or not, you enjoy watching it. And doing it in a way where it wasn't about him. It wasn't about, you know, his ego acting as if he's the all-knowing greatest coach to ever coach, but giving the players the credit who deserve credit and just being so humble throughout the whole thing. And then you see him go down in the same way and just in constant pain, holding his head every, you know, every day, doing his best to make it through a practice and ultimately calling it off, you know, for the start of the season was, you know, it was tough. And then as the head coach, now all of a sudden I'm doing it. I have no idea if it's going to work and it's stressful. And then all of a sudden we start having success and I'm having the time of my life. And at the same time, I just feel complete guilt inside because someone that I really admire and look up to and has given me the opportunity to do this is sitting at home in pain every day. And we're talking on the phone about the games and I can hear it in his voice and just a really tough time, really, because it, like I said, on one hand, while I'm lost in the moment, I'm having a blast doing it right with these guys. And as soon as that moment goes, I'm thinking like, this should be Steve. Steve should be enjoying all this. And it was, obviously when he came back, it was a nice moment.
You know, you mentioned I used the word guilt. I would think maybe there's a part of you that, I mean, you're 24-0 and then you're, you know, 39-4 when you hand the team back over to him. But when you're hearing people go, hey, like, maybe they don't miss Steve Kerr. Maybe Steve Kerr, like, they're 24-0. That had to kill you, right? Yeah. Because you knew what he had, but your job's to go out and win every night and you were doing it. But I wonder whether, like, sort of mixed, because you hear that stuff.
Yeah, and it's not true. We 100%, the things we were doing as a staff, we used to joke. We'd say we'd get, you know, the what would Jesus do bracelets, but we get them for Steve. What would Steve do? And then we kind of joke about it in coaches' meetings, but we were also serious. Like, it wasn't my job to come in and do things differently. Right. It was my job to keep the, you know, keep the ship moving and try to organize practice in a way that, you know, we knew Steve would do. And I would talk to Steve every night on the phone about different ideas. You know, obviously I can't just, when it, we get to the games, I still have to be myself. Right. I can't coach a team and try to be somebody else. There's obviously the things that I would do differently that I did differently from an individual standpoint, but everything we did as a group was how we thought we would, you know, do it as if Steve was there. And, you know, for them to say, people to say that was just silly because it was, you know, his system, his vision, his plan, the way everyone interacted with each other, the team that we had already kind of had that cohesiveness with, you know, like we said earlier in this conversation, that's the tough part. That's, can you get players to buy? Can you get superstars? Can you get Andre, an Olympian, an all-star to come off the bench and buy in? Draymond Green, kid, second round pick in the starting lineup when David Lee got hurt, and David Lee to still be a team player. That Steve did all that stuff, and that kind of set the tone for who we were going to be as a team. So, though, yeah, that wasn't fair for people to say.
Would it weigh on you, Luke, as when you were the interim coach, your relationship, you were the guy every day who, you know, you rebounded for Draymond after practice when he would shoot, but it was a way for you guys to have a conversation, talk, and connect. And I know you kept doing that as the interim coach. You didn't want that role to change, but the roles are different. Assistant coach and head coach are different. In your mind, you know, I'm going back to that old role. And was it a fine line between at times having to be hard on guys who weren't used to you being the heavy and then say, well, how am I going to go back when Steve returns to having to be able to be a buffer maybe at times? Was that the high wire act for you at times in that job?
It was, but to the credit of our players up there, a lot of them took the responsibility on with me. We had guys that knew what needed to be done. We had guys that wanted to win. We had veterans that stepped up their leadership roles even more. So there wasn't really that many times that it, you know, that it had to be done or get upset with people. And because it was running so smoothly, I wanted to stay true to my role as much as possible, which for me isn't that hard because I have a pretty open, honest relationship with every player that we had up there. So I had no problem talking to any of them, one-on-one or in front of the team. And that's just kind of who I am as, you know, a person and a coach. So that, you know, it would have been a lot more challenging, I think, with a different group of players, trying to juggle that role of assistant head, knowing I'm going back to assistant. But, you know, we had true professionals up there that weren't going to try to take advantage of a substitute teacher or whatever you want to call it. Instead of taking that route, they took the route of, all right, let's go. Luke's running the team now. Let's all step up our game to make sure that, you know, we're staying the course.
I remember seeing Mike Budenholzer first year he left. He went to Atlanta and they had real good success. And the Spurs won the title the next year, and he was at, I guess it was when they beat Miami, and he was there when they clinched. And I remember talking to him after and sort of his appreciation after he left the place of, wow, it's special there. And you know it when you're a part of it. Do you feel that already at times where there were just things you could probably take for granted there with the leadership of the players, with just self-starters, with your best player being your most unselfish, hardest worker that – maybe you can't always take for granted here, but does your appreciation of that place and what they've got going there, like when you move away from it, is it even broader?
Absolutely. No? Absolutely it is. And I said before, you know, I was very aware of how lucky we were to be part of that up there. And, you know, knowing that most teams aren't like this, because I've been on great teams before, and even the great teams didn't have that same type of
harmony. You didn't always have great harmony on those Laker teams, even when you were winning.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. So we were championship teams, but the harmony that team had was just incredible. And being removed from that, you see it's even to another level than you realize when you're up there coaching and part of it. As far as the intelligence we had from multiple players, being able to read defenses and communicate and switch and be, I mean, we could throw a defensive scheme in the day of a game and our guys would execute it, you know, to a T for the most part. And, you know,
would you try that here? Could you do that here yet?
No, I mean, we have tried it,
right,
and it's, we're still struggling defensively. And, you know, it's like I've said it with us down here. We have to constantly like remind ourselves it's about the future. So even if we want to try a scheme and it hurts us in that particular game because we're missing rotations, it's still us getting reps at doing things. And it's us getting practice at being able to cover different ways and see who's good at reading stuff and who we have to keep away from those type of decisions. So we have done it up here and it hasn't gone as smoothly as you would hope when you come up with that idea. But the great thing about our group here is they give that effort. I mean, they try everything we ask. They try to get it done. And we might make a lot of mistakes, being a young team, whether it's turnovers or not making the right reads, but we fight, you know, whether we're down 15 or we're up 3 or whatever it is, our guys give an effort. And for a coach and a coaching staff, that makes it a lot of fun to go to work every day.
Luke, I'll let you get back to thinking about the Rockets tonight. Appreciate you doing this on a game day with me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. A big thank you to our guest today, Lakers coach Luke Walton. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to the podcast. And be sure to subscribe to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix and the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. You can find us on thevertical.com, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. And you can now hear the Vertical Podcast Network every weekday at 3 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the SiriusXM app on Channel 967. I'd also like to take a moment to give a big thank you to our sponsors today, Stance, SeatGeek, and Movement Watches. Please be sure to support them the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. We'll catch you next time.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.